Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Thank you. Hello again, fellow basement dwellers. This is your good friend, Patrick O'Dowd, welcoming you into another edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Bandwagon Nerds is, of course, brought to you as a part of the ChairShot Radio Network here on thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Make sure you get yourselves over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot and invest in a chair shot shirt. We need to see that swag out there, people. It's beautiful and helps us continue to put on the best podcasts in, the world. I'm going to speak big of us, the world. We're the best. We are joined with, it's an OG bandwagon day. It is an OG bandwagon day. We have Patrick O'Dowd here, of course. I've got my good friend, the lawyer himself. Less sleepy, we're just going to say, it sounds like he was rejuvenated by the coffee and the Tunny. Get this, for the first time in I don't know how long, Patrick O'Dowd may be on three consecutive days for the Chair Shot Radio Network because, kids, musical chairs got recorded this week.
Wow. Yeah. It great. It'd be kids, 2 weeks in a row. Would it be through 3 weeks in a row?
It would be a triplicate for the Greg Kabanko show. Now
I'll believe it when I get up Wednesday morning and see it.
I don't want to jinx it. I want to put it out there and it did not come true. But that's right. You're number one chair shot villain. may be on his three scheduled days. And no, Dave and I, we recorded a banger episode of Musical Chairs. I actually really sorry, I know this is tomorrow, but Dave, hey, we had a good show.
Yeah, that was fun.
I liked that show. I thought that was a good time.
That was very fun.
No spoiler on the bands. Everybody already knows what my band is because it's been a long time coming. Yeah. Yeah, I've been talking about Alice in Chains for about a month and a half now. But I do have to put it out there. This the Patrick O'Dowd streak will continue next week. Patrick O'Dowd will be here for next week. But the week after.
But then
Patrick O'Dowd will be heading off to hang out with the mouse for an extended weekend for Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party. I get to go trick or treat in Disney World, you guys.
That's like those are like, you know, business trips, bandwagon nerds business trips. Like if you go do something like that, you know, you can write it off. If we PTO, you know, you can
start
come back and report. It's like investigative reporting. Yeah. You get to do, you know, you get to file that under instead of using PTO.
We should make Bandwagon Nerds an LLC, and then we can write off all this shit. That's a great idea, Tony. Of course, we got to make a profit.
Oh, we have to take that. In income.
Yeah, we do.
We have to have income. So head over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot to help us turn a profit.
Help our tax liability. Yes, thank you.
I don't even know what to write off, but they do, and they're the ones writing it off.
Let me Yeah, I'm excited about the trip. I told this to Dave when we recorded Musical Chairs. I actually had an opportunity to miss this show, and I turned it down. I could have bowled for dollars today. I had an opportunity to tournament, but I bowled in a tournament last week. I didn't want to bowl in another tournament this week. It would have been a doubles tournament. But I don't know. I've been bowling pretty well to start the season, fellas. I know nobody cares. But I care. Like
money, I care.
Averaging a I'm hoping my one of my leagues, the league that I'm a major part of, we are off to an 8-0 start, knock on wood. Long way to go. But when you take a solid 4 wins 2 consecutive days, that's getting off on the right foot. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here because it is Bandwagon Nerds. We got a banger of a show for you. We've got the series finale of the Umbrella Academy. We've got a great trailer park. We got Neil Gaiman trying to save shows. We've got a new PlayStation model out. We've got a lot of shit going on with the Spider-Verse franchise. We're going to talk about all of that today. All of that today, because there is a ton happening. You know, we got no DP, no Ray Cash today, and that's okay. Lives happening. I know DP, he's got other plans, and Ray, he's just a busy man. So it is a trio, an OG trio, if you will, because Tony now, with the consecutive show streak still intact, he's been on more episodes than any of us.
He's probably at this point. Beating me at this point.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. You gotta be. I bet you're number one.
Because
you jumped in.
Not on this show, I don't think. No, you probably.
You jumped in as a regular, like, late season one, right?
No, I don't think so. I think it was a little later than you think. I will say, though, I've just been podcasting a lot lately. So
you, the man of 1,000 podcasts, the Dean Malenko of podcasts.
They all just blend together. Maybe you should get some of this coffee.
This one's great because I don't have to conduct the band here. I can just kind of chime in here and there, you know.
That's fair. Well, and let's conduct that band. Actually, let's conduct that subway train into the Umbrella Academy Season 4, Episode 6, the final episode, the series finale of the Umbrella Academy Season 4, Episode 6. And real quick, by a show of thumbs up or thumbs down, how did we feel about this series finale? Oh, Patrick O'Dowd is alone as both Tony and Dave, for those of you who can't see the screens, because we don't do a live stream on like YouTube.
That's okay.
Yes. So, all right, we'll get into it. We'll get, because clearly we have differing opinions. Before we get too far into it, I do want to say this. As I was watching this episode, and I watched it before we recorded today, because of just how time and keeping it fresh in my mind, I texted Dave when we were getting ready to jump on for musical chairs, and I sent him a little GIF, because I was like, me watching this series finale, and then I put a picture up, or put a little GIF up, nailed it. I called it. The Umbrella Academy as a whole is no more. We should have played the Deadpool last week. We didn't do Deadpool last week because I would have said the entire Umbrella Academy will not survive.
Dumbass.
The Umbrella Academy. I was a dumbass for not putting it on there, but I was a correct ass by saying that I figured that there was one true timeline and that there was going to have to be an allowance of the I'm forgetting what they called it. What's the big event called? What did they call it? My brain is really
the cleanse.
The cleanse had to happen, and that there was only one true timeline. And I really figured it out a couple episodes ago with Five and Lila basically going through all these realities and just seeing nothing, like, and just getting nowhere. And it was very much kind of a heads up signal. What I will say is that most of this episode was a lot of tying up loose ends for events that happened during a season that I don't know were really. They felt at the end of this season, my overall feeling, while I was satisfied with the story and the finale, I thought the other like subplots were so extraneous in a lot of different ways that weren't entirely necessary to the overarching like story. Like Klaus's little like arc, I think it was fine, but was it necessary? I don't know. Maybe Five Lila and Diego's little like triangle in their lives. Maybe because of Five's need to kind of find connection in a world where he's never found connection. I will also die on the hill that Lila loved both Diego and Five. Based on the end of that episode, 1,000% she loved them both. So, all right. And at the end, I loved that it was, you know, the hubris of one father that resulted in the universe going to shit, and that it was his children that had to take care of it. The Hargreaves children, you know, stepping up to fix their father's one last tragedy created by their father. So, all right, Dave, Tony, I'm going to let you guys talk a little bit about why you were not a fan of this finale, because this was, I will say this, you know, we watched this well after it had been released. And so there were like, it's been a polarizing finale. And I actually don't think that's a bad thing. I'll tell you why in a little bit. But go ahead, Dave, why don't you start us off? Because you were not a fan. You thumbs downed it. So talk to us. Why did you thumbs down the finale of Umbrella Academy?
The finale makes sense. And I get what they did with that. At the end of the day, you know, here's the thing about this, and I'll just say this in a more overarching way and then turn it over to Tony, because I have a feeling he might feel the same way. I love the characters of this show. I absolutely love I love Five. I love Klaus, Alice, and all everybody who we've met who's come and gone in there. But what I realized at the end of the day is that while I love the characters, the story's kind of lazy. And I think it's just like, they go from apocalypse to apocalypse to apocalypse. And at the end of the day, what you discover is that It's the characters themselves who are the apocalypse. And they're the ones who need to be eliminated. And I get that, but I just felt like the finale of this, to lead up to everything that we've gone through, was kind of unimaginative. And, and to use wrestling parlance, some lazy booking going on. It's like, well, wait. We're just going to get rid of everybody? We couldn't come up with a more unique solution to this? Something that preserved it? We're just going to get rid of them? I mean, that's it. They're all these characters that we've known and loved for all these seasons are just gone. And that's the solution to it? It felt really flat. It left me feeling very flat. And I just like, man, that just sucks, because it's just like, you guys could have come up with something different, some sort of different sort of theory or so. I mean, yeah, I know if you watch it to the end of the post credits and you get a little glimpse of hope from the marigolds that pop up.
Your consolation is the lives that were outside of the box affected by what happened, they get to continue on. Like, right. They show,
and that's what they want.
Like, who's the girl from, Drew Carey show? And,
I don't know, but like Claire gets to go on, which was Allison's main objective for four seasons, or at least three.
Grey's Anatomy, Redhead, Kate Walsh.
Yeah. Right. You know, at the end of the day, like you're saying, the people who are supposed to be in the timeline survive and everything's back on track. And I dig that part. But it's almost like, okay, all of the characters that we've known and loved were just anomalies. Like, it's like one Neo from the Matrix. They're all anomalies. And there is a lot of Matrix tied into this. At the end, he's gone and everything goes on. And here you get the same thing. Now there's seven of them. It just felt unimaginative to me. That's my complaint about it. Patrick's smiling and disagreeing, but it was too easy.
Love the ending to this. I thought it was perfect. I thought it was the right note. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I don't want to.
I want to hear what Tony has to say. I want to see where he is on this.
Yeah.
I kind of agree with Dave. I would have rather just not did this season and just left it where they had it than after three. A lot of it felt forced, even like the story that they told and the way they kind of told it, not just the ending, but it was just different and not in the best way. I agree with the characters. Yeah. The main characters of the Umbrella Academy, like, you fall in love with them, just like we did Doom Patrol, right? Like, this group of misfits that come together at the end of the day. And it is kind of a clever concept, but I just didn't like it, because in the end, like, none of it really happened. So it's like, oh,
I know, it's so great.
Oh, it's like, you know, what's the kid from the Wonder Years? Fred Savage just wakes up.
Fred Savage.
Yeah, he just wakes up from his cold induced dream that he had for the Princess Bride, and everything's fine again. You know, no big deal.
It was a tighter story that they were telling than the way Doom Patrol, like you mentioned Doom Patrol, and we were kind of, I don't know, split on the way that one ended as well. But this one was a tighter story, but kind of an equally, like Pat said, a polarizing ending, to be sure. A lot of people don't like it. Like, even in my own household, like, a lot of people, like, my wife didn't like it. My niece loved it. So that kind of stuff, it does breed good conversation. And that's kind of what we're doing here.
Right. And that's why I think it's not a bad thing that this was a polarizing finale, is because I do think that there is something to the chatter that came with the way this concluded. It just, to me, they've always been outcasts. They've always been, like, their whole narrative for four seasons have been these nine children who don't fit in the world that they're in. And you learn through the end of this season that the reason why is because they're not supposed to be here. And that the reason why is because Reginald Hargreaves, in his grief over the death of his wife, tried to, like, in bringing her back, also created these children who were anomalies that he then collected and tried to, in a desperate attempt to keep her alive, he manipulated them. And that's the thing that, for me, like, why I like it so much is because it's not a happy ending. I mean, it is, but it isn't. It's a melancholy ending. And it's okay to have a melancholy ending, because I know we want everybody to walk away from this, because I love Luther. He's a big, dumb animal. Love him to death. love Diego. Overconfident piece of shit. I hate Allison, though. Fuck her. I just can't stand that character. Worst character ever. Allison Hargreaves died. Number five, though, is my absolute favorite.
Yeah.
And, you know, him going into the diner and seeing all the alternatives of himself and having that moment where he's like, he knows the answer. He knows what he has to do. He knows what they have to do in order to stop this cycle. And that's the thing, is that the cycle that was created was going to perpetuate. And the only thing that I felt was rushed and kind of silly was Lila's decision at the end, because that was so hastily done for whatever reason. I would have much preferred maybe that episode is an hour and a half, you know, and we play out that dilemma a little bit more. Now Tony's, you know, he's saying no. Again, you can't see it, but I felt like that was really about the only thing, because I do get, like, I love my family, and you have these children, you have this life that you created, and then they're gone, and you've just gotten back to them. Like, you've missed them for 7 years because you've been in this subway system, and then to have to give that up.
Yeah.
I wanted her moment of clarity to not be five coming back for her. I wanted it to be different than that. But to me, that was equivalent. And at the end of the day, maybe it's because and this is going to sound like bragging, and I don't mean it to sound like bragging, because I kind of saw where it was going, and because I sort of called it, I was satisfied with that. Because, and at the end of the, and it's so perfect that we ended that episode into credits with a redux of the narration for episode one, season one. Except this time, nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
It's just a normal day. Loved it. I'm perfectly happy with this. It's funny. I'm looking at the IMDb score, and it's got like a 4.9. Literally almost a 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
So down the middle, people.
See, like, I liked the Lila stuff because Lila was never – she wasn't one of the original kids. So she
– correct.
She's the true anomaly and the outlier in this whole thing, who gets sucked in because of – who she gets entangled or involved with and that sort of, but like you're saying, she's presented with this choice of, yeah, stay with my family and the world ends, or join up with everybody else. We end and everybody else goes on. So, you know, you kind of felt her dilemma, but I agree with you. This, it did feel a little bit rushed. Like, you know, she, you could see her going through it, but her ultimate decision is kind of this snap judgment sort of thing going on. But,
right.
What's interesting is, like, you know, we always talk about like in Jurassic Park, where Jeff Goldblum makes the thing that life finds a way. And we've seen so many other movies that the world and nature and the nature of things will self correct. And this is really what's going on. The cleanse is the world self correcting, and basically in the form of a giant, hideous monster, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I get it. It makes sense. It's just like, I just wanted them to come up with a more imaginative. It didn't require a whole lot of imagination to do this. Cause like, and this is not a knock on you, Pat, at all. Because you did. You nailed it. You predicted it. But wasn't it kind of predictable? I mean, it the way that they went about it. And then the end of the day, you're like, oh, man, I thought they were going to do something different.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I liked the story they told. I liked the direction it went. I was fine. I was happy with it. I was content. So
Tony's like, no.
All right. That puts a cap on this season. The series. Umbrella Academy. Yeah, I would say overall this was a great series, a good series. I loved it. Big thumbs up.
Yeah.
Even with the polarizing finale, which seems to be a thing these days. With series finales, a lot of polarizing series finales. Like, seems like fans, and maybe this is probably a different episode or a different topic for a different episode at a different time. There's an interesting level of like agency I see fans wanting to have over how series end these days, whether it be ones that we hate, ones that we love. And it'd be interesting to explore that a little bit, because it does seem like there's a lot of unsatisfied fans when it comes to beloved series ending. What I do want to do, though, is note that we're going to turn the page, and next week we have a new Marvel series that we're going to be covering. We are going to cover the first two, episodes, I think they're both dropping, of Agatha All Along. I am very excited about this. I can't wait to see Catherine Hahn reprise her role as Agatha Harkness. Also love that we get to keep the name Harkness going for a while, as opposed to Hargreaves, I guess. Harkness over Hargreaves, but, you know, similar idea. But one of the biggest delights out of a terrific series in WandaVision was Catherine Hahn, and now we're going to get a series with her in the focal. I can't wait to see how this goes. Excitement level for the show going in. David Ungar, are you ready for some Agatha All Along, just in time for spooky season?
Yeah, we need some more Marvel. We've had very little of it other than Deadpool and Wolverine. It is time to get back in the saddle with that. I'm hoping that this is going to be a really fun and enjoyable series, and actually hoping that it leads to somewhere and wherever we're going next on this thing. You know, maybe this is how we get Wanda back. I'm hoping. We'll see.
Ye shall indeed. Tony, what about you, man?
Yeah, I mean, definitely can't wait for that. I think it's a great call. It will have something we'll be kind of watching on our periphery as well, but I think I can't wait for the clever humor that some of these Disney Plus series have provided, and especially, you know, Catherine Hahn's character.
Yeah, between her and Aubrey Plaza, I'm looking for it. That cast in general is pretty darn stacked, because you've got her, Aubrey Plaza, Patti LuPone, God, I can't remember her name. Deborah Jo Rupp, is that the mom from That 70s Show? So a lot of great talent to see on there as well. I do want to say, though, the promotional posters that they released, can we stop giving Deborah Jo Rupp bottles of wine as part of her promotional materials? I get it. She drank a lot in That 70s Show as a character, and it was always wine. But come on, there's more to the woman than that. She's a hell of an actress. All right. Tony took a step away for a second. So I'm going to just...
I'm here. You can go to commercial.
We are. We're going to take our first commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to jump right into the trailer park. We are small but mighty in the trailer park. I've been very excited to cover it. So stick around for that. Hope you are enjoying the conversation so far. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People. AFSCMEpeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination.
One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People, AFSCMEpeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Welcome back to Bandwagon Nerds here on the ChairShot Radio Network, a part of TheChairShot.com, ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot for all of your ChairShot and Bandwagon Nerd swag needs. Patrick McDowd, PC Tunney, David Ungar here to regale you with all the finest in nerddom today. Time to head to the trailer park, Mr. Tunney. We need to play some beautiful banjo, because even though we're small but mighty, the music's got to play. Just kind of want to let it go for a little bit longer today. I'm really feeling the banjo. There you go. Yeah, gonna fade it out. Yeah, very nice. All right, we only got three trailers here in the trailer park today, and we're gonna start with. Okay, I noticed this trailer. I actually commented on this when I shared this trailer. So the movie we're gonna talk about is a film called Subservience. It is a movie starring Megan Fox playing a robot. I don't know that that's a big stretch for her, but we'll get into that in a minute. What I do want to talk about, though, because this is yet another AI horror flick, and it's very reminiscent, and I said this when I shared the trailer. We are in this interesting period of horror films focusing on AI and the dangers of AI, whether it be Megan, whether it be Afraid, whether it be this film, Subservience, which, oddly enough, there's actually, I got to look it up, but I've seen this plot before where a dude basically buys a robot, an artificial intelligence woman, to act as a surrogate mother and wife for him and his daughter because his wife is either ill or in a coma or not well, and is helping, you know, until the wife recovers, is kind of taking on those duties. And of course, as has been the case with many of these, you know, the AI goes wrong and starts to insinuate herself into the home and tries to, you know, replace the wife. Her was another AI film with Joaquin Phoenix, not a horror movie, but Joaquin Phoenix and Scarlett Johansson. AI, the dangers of AI, which is not new, like this dates all the way back to 2001, A Space Odyssey, if we really want to go back there. But like recently, with all of this AI in our world around us, this is very reminiscent to me of those 1950s alien invasion films that were just so big for science fiction at the time as an allegory for the Red Scare, the Cold War, Russians invading the United States, except in this case, you know, it's aliens. Here, much more overt, but this concept of the dangers of artificial intelligence, it's everywhere. And this is the latest edition. I don't know that this thing doesn't really break any new ground. this isn't really a film that, as I watch the trailer, I'm like, man, I need to go out of my way to check this out. I'm not going to. And I'm sure, you know, I made a joke about, you know, Megan Fox and being a robot. And, you know, I do think the film looks good in terms of, like, its look and appearance. Its story seems to be, while not, you know, while tropey, seems like it'll be fine. But it's just, to me, it seems very similar and more of the same of things that we're already getting, which is why I think it's a skip for me. I think if this movie had come out 5-6 years ago, maybe I'm talking about it differently. But now we've got Megan, we've got Afraid, we've got all these other AI, dangers of AI films coming out. This one just seems like another one lost in the shuffle. Tunney, what say you?
No, thanks. Yeah, it is interesting. Yeah, I guess they're kind of behind the curve here a little bit. The wave of the AI horror. It'd be interesting to see if someone could use this to come up with a different kind of concept, because, I mean, while I'm not the biggest horror fan, I do kind of like suspense and thrillers and things of that nature. No one's really come at it from a different, like a completely unobvious and different angle from the AI aspect, in my opinion, yet.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, it just, it feels tropey. Dave, what do you think?
Yeah, no, tropey, exactly. This is where we're going right now with all these sorts of movies. You know, like the Megan was really, you know, I haven't seen it yet, but it's next on my list to watch. But I hear good things about it. And yeah, I think if all you're doing is making movies about the dangers of AI, it's like, well, Terminator did that really well many years ago, and T2 did that really well years ago. And now you've got, you know, this notion of AI, it starts off okay, and then it turns on you. And while, yeah, I said this is the perfect role for Megan Fox, because her acting's always been robotic. There's nothing wrong with looking at her, but her acting is just,
you know what? I'm gonna take umbrage with that, because Jennifer's body she's terrific in.
Yeah.
She doesn't have to do much. So, but, like, she's the main character. Anyway, go ahead. I'm not going to fight over the merits of Megan Fox as an actress. I think that we're a little hard on her because of what she did to the Transformers franchise.
Yeah, I mean, this looks like a perfect role for her, but yeah, like you're saying, it just seems like, okay, this is where they're going. It's a big cash in. Let's cash grab this thing. And we know that people are curious about, well, what's AI all about? Are they really gaining sentience? And is this going to steal my husband by seducing him and all that? It's like interesting, but, this is a pass for me as well. I don't think I'll be lining up to see this one.
Yeah. And what so just for funsie, I Googled AI horror movies, and just to kind of go through it: Upgrade, Tau, Latency, Ex Machina, Margot, I Am Mother, Transcendence. Like, there's just been so many. Minority Report, you could argue, is about AI. Demon Seed, Megan, Blade Runner. And Blade Runner, you know, was in the 80s. So it's a tough sell. I don't know that it's there. We'll have to see. Let's move on to our next trailer. And this is a trailer I know Dave is very excited about, which is why I made Tony go first on Subservience, because I want to hear Dave's thoughts on the latest rendition. This is the third time, by the way, that the Stephen King novel Salem's Lot, which Tunney has already said no thank you.
He's tapped out already on this one.
Big fan of horror that Tunney is. He's so excited he has no comment. That's how we'll say it right there. But this is the third time that the Stephen King novel Salem's Lot has been put to film. Once in, I think it was the late 70s, like 78, yeah, somewhere in there. Once with Rob Lowe, once in around 2004 with Rob Lowe. And now Max is about to release. I do believe it's a series. It's a miniseries. It's not a full length feature film adapting this novel to the screen. The trailer looks great and eerie, doesn't really tell you anything other than you have somebody, a guy returning home to his hometown of Salem's Lot. And, well, there's vampires there. And they're fucking some shit up. It's been a long time since I've read Salem's Lot. I vaguely remember the basic plot points. I believe there's a priest who's lost his faith that's part of it. That is a big struggle in here. Dave, I'm gonna turn it over to you right away. Trailer looks sufficiently creepy and scary. I need to show it to the little O'Dowd and see if he wants to watch it, because in his horror journey, this might be a good series for him to check out. So thoughts on this trailer?
Yeah, this is this one I'm definitely gonna watch, because there are a lot of modernization of that 70s miniseries that is, I mean, I grew up with that show, and that show terrified the shit out of me in the best way possible. But there's so many little things that they're doing in this trailer that are homages and throwbacks to that earlier series. You know, the groundskeeper at the cemetery throwing the dirt on the coffin, and then the coffin starting to bang and him laying like, what the shit's going on? The vampires at the window is iconic. You know, the dead woman after she turns into a vampire asking Danny, where are you? But they add the little twist to it. It's like, answer me now, which she didn't do. But there are so many little scary elements and terrifying elements as to this series that makes it a must watch for me, because I'm a huge Stephen King fan. Salem's Lot was one of my favorite, absolute favorite shows from back in the late 70s. And just kind of like, it's one of the shows that really instilled in me in my love for horror. And this looks like an absolute must watch. I want to see how they stick to the story. You know, when Mr. Barlow shows up, is he going to be the Nosferatu sort of thing? Or is he going to be more traditional vampire, that sort of thing? So, yeah, this looks like it's going to be excellent. I don't know how many episodes it's going to be, but it's a movie? Shit, I don't know if they can pull this off a movie.
I could have sworn it was a series of it. Oh, no, I'll believe it.
October 3rd, right? Gary Dauberman.
Thanks,
hour 53 minutes.
Huh. Well, that's disappointing, because it would have worked better as a series.
We'll have to wait and see. And maybe with the luxury of it being on Max, that movie can get some extended runtime and see it through. But I too will be very interested to see how this goes. I'm excited for it. The trailer looks great. The thing that's always interesting about sort of cutting something down is what ends up on the cutting room floor. Because there was a lot in Salem's Lot, that first trailer. So good stuff. The last trailer that we have was a trailer that I will admittedly share, I walked into expecting to hate. And guys, I didn't hate it. And that's the latest trailer for Venom, The Last Dance. I can't explain why I didn't hate this. I think maybe it's because it explained more. And we didn't just have, whoa, Venom horse. This one looked a lot more to be exploring the relationship and the bond between Venom and Eddie Brock, while also shedding more light on the arrival of the symbiotes to his home planet and the symbiote god being who they have to do battle with. It seems pretty clear. This is the end of a trailer or a trilogy for these characters. I was interested, guys. I was interested in this trailer. I don't know if it's just clever editing, what it was, but I might be in for Venom, The Last Dance.
It's one of the few things Sony has done, right? Like in that universe, right? This isn't.
It looks fun.
Yeah. And Tom Hardy helps. Like,
yes.
He is so good in this role. But I just, yeah, I mean, it'd be fun to see in, you know, Screen X or 3D, but I don't even know that it's out in any of those things. So I don't think I'll end up watching it.
Tune in next week when we all watch and review Venom, The Last Dance.
I mean, the Venom movies have been fun. As far as, like, if you're talking about the Sony Spider-Verse, which has been mostly misses, Venom's one of the few aspects of that that has been kind of enjoyable. You know, the first one was very good. The second one was so-so. This one looks like, yeah, this might be fun. And watching Venom, you know, lose his shit on a slot machine in Vegas, that sounds like a fun time.
That was a good time. So, and he breaks it.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll run right out and watch this, but I wouldn't be mad about seeing it. That's for sure.
No, not at all. I think it'll be a pretty good time. Yeah, and I think I'm going to, I don't know that I'll see it at the theater. I guess I should be clear, but I will probably watch it. And that's not necessarily a terrible thing. All right. Let's head into news around the Nerdosphere, Dave. And I want to start by talking about Neil Gaiman. Jeez. Neil Gaiman, who is the author behind some of my favorite shows to currently watch on streaming. But a few months back, allegations surfaced from some young women who worked for Neil Gaiman as nannies, alleging sexual misconduct, sexual abuse, rape, things like that, sexual assault. And it was really kind of interesting because a couple women stepped forward, but like nothing was really making news about it. Well, an article and a report came out this week from, I found it from The Nerdist, but Neil Gaiman has offered to step aside so that Good Omens Season 3 can continue to move forward without him attached to it. You know, Neil Gaiman's also the producer behind the Netflix series The Sandman. He was also the producer behind The Dead Boy Detectives, which has been canceled by Netflix, though they did not cite his allegations as the reason that it was canceled. But it would seem that we once again have a scenario where some beloved properties are in real danger here because, you know, Neil Gaiman's has multiple allegations surrounding him of sexual assault. How, on a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are we about a third season of Good Omens and a season 2 of Sandman? I'm at a 10. Just going to say it out loud.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It's interesting there in the article, there was zero mention of Sandman season 2, which I thought that's concerning that they're not even talking about a season 2 of Sandman. So, and the fact they've already gone and canceled Dead Boys Detective Agency. Tony, you haven't watched any of this stuff, I'm sure, but, yeah, it's not a good look. When these allegations start flying, you got four women accusing you of this stuff. And I like how the article says, well, his stepping away shouldn't be deemed an admission of guilt. It's like, well, it shouldn't be, but it kind of is. So, you know, we'll see where they go. But I don't have a lot of faith. And that's too bad because I really liked Sandman season 1. It was a really good show. And a lot of us were really looking forward to season 2, and I just don't see that happening at this point in time. Tony, what do you think?
I don't have any thoughts. I don't watch any of these shows. I don't know. I don't know about the allegations or anything like that. Maybe why don't we just move into the next?
Well, it's interesting that, you know, you haven't watched it because it is a DC property, like a Vertigo sort of thing.
Yeah. Okay. you know me. I'm like a smell test guy. Like I'm going to watch it or I'm not going to watch it. You know,
it's kind of weird, but it's a good show.
I think we should just roll into the next news around the Nerdosphere.
As Mr. O'Dowd stepped away for a minute, what is the next, what are we doing next? What is the next topic?
Sony reveals the next generation of PlayStation 5, the PlayStation 5 Pro. Now, Dave, I want to, initially I was like, oh, $700. What the fuck? And then I was like, well, I paid what? $500-$600 for what? The one I got.
Yeah.
Patrick, we didn't have more else to say about the last topic. Did you have a final thought?
No, that's fine. No, it was just more of this is a thing that happened, and yeah. Neil Gaiman's in trouble.
I just go ahead. I didn't really watch any of those series, so we kind of moved on to the next thing, and I was just explaining.
He shit all over it, Pat. He really shit all over it.
I did not. I tried to politely disengage.
He pulled a little O'Dowd talking about the Minecraft
about
movie.
Minecraft, yeah.
Than that. I was a lot nicer than that.
He wasn't having it last week.
Initially, I saw the $700 price tag, and I was like, oh, what the fuck? And now that I sit and think about it, that's really not much more than I actually played for my regular PlayStation 5. So, but what? Faster downloads, faster loading during game, better graphics. I mean, I don't know. I guess if you don't have one already and you're a gamer,
sure.
Why didn't you? And
sure.
Why are you doing it now?
I mean, yeah, they're using AI to upscale the graphic rate and get the better resolution and that sort of thing. But none of us, I mean, like, look, none of us are playing these top of the line. Maybe DP is, and he's not here. But the other three of us are not playing these top of the line games that are maxing out. Now, I know there are some games out there that are taxing the capabilities of the present PS5, which is shocking to me to think we're 3 years in the cycle and they're already tapping the technology.
He's playing Rebels right now. He's playing the new Star Wars game right now. Outlaws. Yeah.
So here's the thing, though, Dave. You're like, only 3 years. It's about halfway through this current iteration's life cycle. That's what they talked about.
Right.
Like, if you're playing NCAA 25, you don't need that extra graphical oomph, I don't think.
Well, but let me tell you a game that I did play that does really would really benefit from that extra oomph, and that's Baldur's Gate 3. Yeah. Like, that game's massive. That game is massive, and it is technically like the game really suffers, and I'll talk about this. I don't know whether PS5 will make a difference, but there are points in the game where there's a shit ton going on. Specifically think about the finale of the game. So the last battle of the game in the final act is hordes upon enemies and hordes upon allies that you can summon to help fight those battles. And the game can seriously lag and stall out for stuff like that. So I think that, you know, Larian Studios, when they made that game, it was designed to stretch the limits of current processors and technology, whether that be Xbox, PlayStation, or the PC. And it took even longer for the Xbox because the Xbox is a little behind the other two platforms.
There's got to be some advantage to real-time online gaming like Call of Duty, Fortnite, things of that nature as well.
The other big advantage that the system has is the storage capacity and the increase in that, because as long as these systems are going to continue to insist that even if you have a physical medium like a disc, that they're going to mirror this onto your hard drive and use up all that
space.
Oh, this
is diskless. This is diskless.
Dickless?
You can't even use a disc.
Okay.
This is a Patrick O'Dowd not approved console. No hard media.
No physical media.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate, but it's also where we're going.
And it is, but it's interesting to me, like, in this era where cloud sort of based stuff is so prevalent, right? Why do we have to put this on our hard drive and exhaust that? Because these games take up a shit ton of hard drive space. And none of these hard drive, even if you get an external hard drive, it doesn't solve the problem because all you can do is save your data there. But you can't actually play a game from your external hard drive. You've got to, reinsert it on the main hard drive in order to play it. That's a problem that they have. Hopefully the next era, the next generation, the next iteration, the PS6 or Xbox, whatever we're going to call it, two, knowing Xbox, will do something crazy like that. Hopefully they solve some of that storage capacity issue, because that's a big, you know, for people like me who I'm playing maybe 7 or 8 games, all right, not that big
a
deal.
You're gonna pay for a cloud membership from these companies is what's going to happen.
It's moving that way. You can already see it's moving that way. And this is designed. Well, we have a problem with storage? Get the cloud membership.
Honestly, I got 5-6 games on my PlayStation 5, a regular PlayStation 5, and I don't have a problem with
I'm not
with,
playing more
you know,
than that.
Space.
I was like, who's got time for it?
Right.
I'm using my PS4 as an external hard drive. is what I'm doing.
You can if you can cross over the the game.
I put Fallout 76. I removed it from the PS5 and put it on the PS4 because it is a massive game that uses up so much space on the PS5. I'm like, the PS5 is not capturing the graphics on this. Who gives a shit? I put it back on my PS4.
Yeah, I think I own all of 5 games total, playing 2 of them currently. But those are, I almost always buy disc. But even if you buy disc, you still have to do a data download. You still have to do an update. You still have to do stuff. So it matters, but it doesn't. It just gives me a physical copy of the game to be able, if something goes sideways, to save. Unlike Baldur's Gate 3, which I have to keep on my hard drive in perpetuity because it's a digital game.
Can I give my one Lord of the Rings reference? Patrick and his physical media. Precious.
Very precious.
One disc.
I went into a lengthy conversation with one of my students at work. One disc to rule them all. This week about why I prefer physical media and will buy it until it's no more. So I am very much set in that way.
And that's why we love you right there.
Thanks, boss. I appreciate it.
Number 1,964.
Oh, I didn't know there were that many.
Yeah.
As a number one chair shot villain, I would expect less.
Yeah. Well, not all of them are great. We love you because you are a villain. No, I'm just kidding.
I would not be surprised to see the next generation get rid of disc completely. I think there's a real risk of that.
Well, here's the thing: I think it's definitely going to happen. I think that, but then, like everything in the world, what's old is new again. It'll be gone, and then it'll get a resurgence. I mean, for Christ's sakes, people are spending $70, $80, $90 for fucking vinyl now.
And how many times have they revamped and re-released like old Atari consoles? Right, put a new.
Oh yeah,
that happens every 2 years.
And the technology is such that the little consoles like this big, and you just like plug it into your television.
Yeah.
It's basically a flash drive. So, all right. We're going to take our second commercial break. And speaking of villains and icons, we come back. We are going to talk about one of the all-time greats. Stay tuned for that and more. You are listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com.
This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. Patrick O'Dowd, David Ungar, PC Tony here, talking all things nerd. Also, make sure you get yourself over to prowrestlingtees.com/chairshot and invest in one of those beautiful chair shot shirt designs. Guys, there is a trouble a-brewing in the Sony Spider-Verse franchise universe. I titled this next bullet on the rundown, what the hell is going on with the Spider-Verse franchise? So, this week, an internet speculator by the name of Jeff Snyder, who reports on Hollywood stuff, he put out there behind his paywall a claim that the third and final installment in the animated End of the Spider-Verse saga would be delayed until 2027 because creatives had scrapped most of the film and the world went crazy. Within 24 hours, the main composer of the soundtrack to the Spider-Verse and one of its writers/directors/producers have come forward to argue and debunk this rumor. However, the fire is still going despite these statements. I wonder if the guy got half of it right and then pulled a little internet rumor mill stuff. It would not surprise me, and I'd be willing to buy that maybe we're facing 2027 LOL hashtag 2027 or a later release date for this final installment of Into the Spider-Verse based on what we know in the history of what was happening with the animators and the struggle they were having to get the sequel done and the second one across the Spider-Verse done. And so in an effort to do it right, maybe the animators were given more time. I'm not sure I buy that we scrapped the entire story and have started over here in the year of our Lord, September 15th, as we are recording 2024. What say you?
Doesn't sound right. I mean, the story's fleshed out. Why would they be scrapping all of this? That doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. They know where they're going with this. They had quite a bit of it done, if I remember correctly. And then, you know, things happened. The strike happened, right? I mean, isn't that what happened? We were on a schedule, then the strike happens, and the next thing you know, everything kind of falls off the radar. And you're like, well, no one knows what the hell is happening right now. So it doesn't feel right. I mean, you're talking 3 years to get this out? That seems excessive. I mean, I could see like a year from now, maybe at the most you push it in the beginning of 2026. But yeah, I know they want to get it right. I know how much you, and we all love these movies, and I know how much you love the movie, Pat, and just everything that they've done. But I know they want to get it right, but that seems like a pretty long, lengthy delay, don't you think?
It does seem like a very long, lengthy delay. I am mildly concerned about it, but again, I don't think they scrapped the entire story and went back to formula, so to speak. Sonny, what about you? Are you concerned about this?
I'm not a big fan of this. I haven't watched any of it, to be honest with you. It's just the Marvel animation side. I'm sorry, I haven't seen any of them.
You have to watch these two movies.
I'm not a
If you watch I get it, dude. If you watch nothing else out of the Marvel animation world, and I know you've watched X-Men 97, because I begged you to.
And What If.
And What If. I'm telling you, dude, though, in terms of two feature films that are worth it to watch, back me up here, Dave.
Yes.
They're really good.
They are. They really are.
I should have some time come the middle of February.
Honey, look, just watch one less cooking show.
Watch my calendar.
Watch one less cooking show and watch this instead. I'll even give you a reprieve on some Big Five shit if you want to watch this instead of an old pay-per-view that you're going to give a 5.9 out of 10. So, you know.
This is a heinous blackmail, if you ask me.
Heinous?
I'm not trying to blackmail. Like, you know how I am, and when I speak very highly of, like...
All right.
Fucking around. That's all right. I'm saying. You know I would not try to lead you astray.
Put it into the consideration category.
Oh, you're so kind.
No, I try not to lie.
We appreciate your consideration. Thank you so much. I think they're phenomenal movies. I think they're so, so good.
They really are.
And not just because they're Spider-Man films.
Let me try and sell Tony on this. Honestly, no bullshitting. Let me go.
Yeah.
Okay. Honestly, no bullshitting. This is as close as Marvel Animation comes to some of the DC stuff that we love. And we love the DC animation movies and the way they do things. This is as close as great as X-Men 97 is, it's different. This is as close as you're going to get to the DC animation stuff. So if that sells you at all.
I know. I already know how good it is.
You're just not a Spider-Man fanatic.
I'll try. The Flash shows up. I don't want you to feel bullied into doing it.
All right, like I don't want you to feel bullied into doing it.
Grant Gustin like voices deep. Somebody in this show. I just don't remember who. Yeah, there you go.
We did get another bit of Spider-Man news, by the way. I don't know if you guys caught this, but we did get an announcement of the director for the next Tom Holland Spider-Man flick as well. As we did learn that Destin Daniel Cretton has the director of Shang-Chi has been announced as the director for the fourth Tom Holland Spider-Man movie. I don't know. I like Shang-Chi. I'll be interested to see what Mr. Destin Cretton's like take is on the story, but I feel like as long as you got Tom Holland to play Peter Parker, you're probably in pretty good shape. I'm also really interested to see what story that they tell. You know what I mean? Like what will be the Spider-Man story that they tell? Because they've done, you know, they basically did Brand New Day with his last series, with everybody forgetting who he was. It's very much Brand New Day, or One Day More, or whatever, which I hated in the comics. But do we get the counter to that story, which is people coming back? It is an interesting flip, though, in that Spider-Man knows and nobody else does, as opposed to in the comics where Mary Jane knows and nobody else does, which I always found to be kind of an interesting flip.
I wasn't sure whether the story was confirmed or not, but once I realized, okay, this is really happening to me, I got excited because we haven't really known for a while whether we were even going to get a Spider-Man 4, whether Tom Holland was going to come back, whether this was going to go revert back to Sony, they were going to run with this, how this was all going to play out. So from my standpoint, the fact that we've got confirmation, we've got Spider-Man 4, we got confirmation it's Tom Holland. Okay. Director choice makes sense to me. And he did a great job with Shang-Chi, so we'll see what happens with this. But yeah, it's very hopeful that, okay, we're going to get a fourth Spider-Man. You look at some of the other pieces on the chessboard, so to speak, for this phase of Marvel and where they can go with Spider-Man and some of the things that are happening. You know, the introduction of Daredevil is a big, you know, we saw him in No Way Home briefly in the Matt Murdock guys, but you got to figure that street level sort of stuff. You know, maybe Daredevil was immune to Strange's spell because of his sensory protections and that sort of thing. I don't know. But I think the fact that we're getting a fourth Spider-Man, it's confirmed. That's very exciting. So I'm the director choice. Yeah, I can live with it. It's fine. It doesn't bother me one way or the other. But to me, the bigger story is this is confirmed. This is happening. Okay, like you're saying, Pat, where do we go with this? How do we get how does everybody remember what's going on? And that's going to be the fun story to tell.
It'll be interesting to see where it goes. I hope it goes someplace positive for that franchise. It's been a terrific franchise to follow. All right. Time. Next up. What's up?
I was just going to say Zendaya.
I'm sorry, Tony.
No, Zendaya is returning as MJ has been confirmed as well.
Absolutely.
She's our
safe word. Sorry, my bad, man. I didn't see you start to talk.
She's our safe word, right? Yeah.
Zendaya is the safe word? Yeah. Of course, yeah. Oh, we weren't playing this game today. This is how I get gray hairs, guys. I used to think it was my job and stress. No, it's
us
playing twisted versions of the password. Though Cable Guy, still low-key, best Jim Carrey movie nobody watches. All right, let's get to our last topic of the day. This week, news came out about the passing of James Earl Jones at the age of 93. It's to say he was nothing short of a titan of the industry is to not do him justice, if for no other reason than one of the most iconic voices in so many different ways. Of course, we here on the bandwagon revere him, as my background is currently showing, as the voice of one Darth Vader, but also, you know, the voice of Mufasa from The Lion King. This is CNN. And so many other places. You know, I think when the news first broke, DJ talked about his role in Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah.
As the villain in Conan the Barbarian. I fondly remember him in both Field of Dreams and The Sandlot. And then how can you forget Joffrey, what I can't remember what the last name was, in Coming to America, Eddie Murphy's character's dad.
Joffrey Jofer.
As the king, Joffrey Jofer of the King of Zamunda. Yeah. Like, he's been everywhere. He's been an icon of the theater and the stage, and it would not be an episode of Bandwagon Nerd if we didn't spend a little bit of time and just speak fondly of James Earl Jones. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to we'll go with either one of whoever wants to go first. Talk about some of your favorite James Earl Jones moments, characters, things you've seen, what you'd like to say about James Earl Jones.
I mean, his most famous line ever obviously applies to me, that people don't actually know. But I feel the dreams you brought up, Patrick. He also is in a really iconic Big Bang Theory episode where he hangs out with Sheldon as James Earl Jones and has like a lot of money to spend, and they thoroughly enjoy each other's company. So that's really fun. And then I'm not sure if it was the clip you shared or not, but his David Letterman top tens, my favorite in particular is things that sound more cool when James Earl Jones says them. So check that out.
The most iconic voice, I mean, arguably the most iconic voice in all of show business, really, when you get right down to it, you think about, you hear that. I mean, as big a Star Wars fans as we are, and like Tony says, it's all Star Wars, but none of that stuff hits if James Earl Jones is not Darth Vader. It, you know, like you're talking about his most famous line ever, "I am your father." That, it's just four words.
Have you seen the parts of Star Wars where the guy who was actually in the suit had the British accent is saying the line?
David Prowse.
Doesn't work.
It feels fucking weird, yeah. Doesn't it?
It really does.
It's like what's his name playing Michael J. Fox's role in Back to the Future.
Right. Right.
Eric Stoltz, right?
And
yep.
I mean, yeah, you're talking in the most iconic villain, arguably the most iconic villain in history. Is Darth Vader, and it doesn't work if it's not James Earl Jones. I mean, what more can you say about him? Mufasa was a tremendous role. Terrence Mann in Field of Dreams. Yeah, that just, we were watching that the other day. It's like my wife's favorite sports movie. She doesn't really like sports movies, but that one she really likes. And he's just the most
iconic. You said your finger was a gun.
Yeah.
Oh, great line.
Exactly. You told me your finger was a gun. You know, oh, people will come, Ray. They will definitely come. But yeah, it's a tremendous loss to the industry. 93, though, you can't take anything away. That's a long, distinguished life where he set the bar for so many people to follow. And it's a huge loss to the industry. But man, the memories and the legacy that he left behind for people to follow. And this is one place where I don't mind AI, because hey, if AI can replicate James Earl Jones' voice and keep Darth Vader out there for the next 50 years, perfect. Let's go. That's
yeah,
great. As long as his estate's getting the royalties.
Go ahead. It's such an interesting thing because, you know, that announcement got made like a year or so ago, that he had signed over the rights to his voice to be continued to use as the voice of Darth Vader for Star Wars, much to the consternation of some of his fellow actors, and rightfully so, because the concern on the other side of it is you know, this idea of the, you know, someone's voice not being theirs and being used without their permission or used in a way that they don't represent or endorse.
Right, but
so I get it. You know, he was of sound mind and made a decision.
Yeah, and we're talking, there's levels of iconography, right? As far as like, you know, people, characters, right. There's Darth Vader. And then there's, you know, that's kind of a character and a role that you need to keep going. And if he was smart enough to say, hey, look, I know my voice is distinctive. I give you the rights to do this as long as my estate's compensated, my legacy, my family. Who cares? I mean, I get where people care, but it's like, look, there are some characters that you look at and the voice is so distinctive. Well, this needs to continue in some way. We have the technology to do that. Let's do that. And Darth Vader is one of those.
All right. A couple of other great roles that I don't think people necessarily initially think of right away when they think of James Earl Jones. He was Admiral Greer in the Harrison Ford, Jack Ryan stories, Clear and Present Danger, amongst others. And literally, if you needed a narrator, anything, even if it was an uncredited narrator, you know what you know where you could go? You could go to James Earl Jones. I will never forget kind of losing my shit a little bit watching the Sylvester Stallone Judge Dredd film. And the opening narration and monologue where we are explaining the dystopian world we live in is voiced by James Earl Jones. And his voice lends such a gravitas and credibility to things that it's amazing. It's mind-blowing. And it's even more amazing and mind-blowing when you consider that one of the most iconic voices of our lifetimes had a stutter as a kid. And he overcame that to be who he is now. So, yeah, just it's sad, even for a man who lived to be 93. And, Tony, the best part of that Big Bang Theory episode is him and Sheldon pranking Carrie Fisher as part of the episode, and then Carrie Fisher and him arguing. It's so cute. It was so great. The best thing about the cast of Star Wars really is that as time has gone on, the sense of humor most of them have had with being good sports and playing along with stuff and different roles outside of the curmudgeon that is Harrison Ford has been wonderful. Last thing I want to point out, I think we're down to three OG actors from Star Wars. And correct me if I'm wrong. I'm going to look it up real quick to make sure. But it's Harrison Ford. It's Mark Hamill. I think it's Anthony Daniels, C-3PO. I think he's still with us. But outside of that, I think that is it. Yes, he is still with us. He is 78 years old. He was born on February 21st, 1946. And the thing that's crazy about Anthony Daniels is that he was fitting himself into that C-3PO suit for a long, long time and still lends his voice for C-3PO roles when the time is right. So I think those are the only three. Well, if you want to count Billy Dee Williams for Lando. But Lando didn't come along until episode 5.
Yeah,
didn't come along until Empire. So, and for me, I don't. This is one last anecdote about this cast and, you know, kind of the touchstone of Star Wars for me. For me, me having this conversation about how many are left reminds me very much of the way my mom and dad used to talk about the original cast for The Wizard of Oz. And when various cast members of The Wizard of Oz would pass away, they would know how many of them were still left until the last one passed. And here I am, like I see this meme pop up in this picture now of when another one passed where it's the whole cast with, I think, the exception of Anthony Daniels, but they've turned to the ones that have passed into basically looking like Force ghosts. And to see that there's only a couple left from something that I know shaped a lot of who I am today is a little sobering and kind of bittersweet. Even when these people have lived pretty good lives, you know, even somebody who had as hard a life as Carrie Fisher, like lived a lot longer than we, you know, I think we initially thought she would. So, yeah, on that note, you know, raise a glass and happy trails to an icon, one James Earl Jones. All right, fellas, from saying goodbye to moving into our final segment of the show, every week, fans, we want to give you a little bit of insight on some stuff to catch in a segment that we call What You Watching. These are shows that the nerds are checking out that maybe we're not covering on the episode on the podcast, but ones we think you should check out nonetheless. This week, let's start with Mr. PC Tunney. Tunney, I know you've been doing a lot of podcasting, but what you watching?
Not a lot.
Into the Spider-Verse, Tunney? Is that what you've been watching?
No.
Okay. Is Saturday Night Live back? Is Saturday Night Live back on its next season?
No, not yet, I don't believe. When it does come back, I'll hopefully catch that and pull that into this segment. But no, I the only thing that I've actually been watching outside of required watching for the show and sports and wrestling is I did get to watch the first 4 episodes of season 4 of Game of Thrones, which I'm rewatching for the third time because I'm suffering from House of the Dragon withdrawal. Joffrey's dead. Hallelujah, the realm is in a better place.
Somewhat.
That's all I got. Yeah. College football, NCAA, a lot of it, Patrick, a lot of it. You know how it goes.
Playing or watching?
Playing.
Ah, gotcha. I haven't watched a whole lot this week. I think I told Tony when we recorded Big Five the other day that I have this tradition that's kind of similar to what you, Pat, and Tony do at the holidays, where you've got your set schedule of like what you're going to watch. So at the beginning of football season, I go and I watch all the America's Day game documentaries from the 66 Packers to the present. And so I've been doing that, which led to an interesting discussion on Big Five as to whether the 72 Dolphins were really the best team of all time or not. And Tony emphatically says, no. I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure. They are the only undefeateds of all time. Tony wants Patrick to comment on this.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't listening to you, Dave. Can you say that again?
Never mind.
Before I get into what I'm watching, because I'm about to watch some NFL football, I actually have a reason to watch the NFL for at least a couple more weeks. Right now, currently my first place Chicago Bears, 1-0 on the season, as opposed to those Green Bay Packers who are not 1-0 on the season. Apparently they're 1-1.
Who's your quarterback?
So half game behind the Chicago Bears in the standings, number one and five.
We've got the ball driving up 13 with 5 minutes
all
to go.
All I know is like, the Commanders have been in the
Malik
red
Willis.
Zone. The Commanders
Malik
have been
Willis
in the red
has passed
zone.
For over 100 yards yeah. for the first time in his career today. He's 11-13 for 115 yards.
I know the Commanders have been in the red zone every single time and have failed to score a touchdown, which is why they will lose.
A lot of field goals.
Yeah.
Okay. For me, the Little O'Dowd's horror movie journey continued this week with a little blend of horror comedy as we watched the Tim Burton film Sleepy Hollow, starring Johnny Depp, Casper Van Dien, Christina...
Ricci,
yeah. I don't know why. Her brain.
Love
her
that
name.
Excuse me. How the Little O'Dowd...
He got bored with it. They want like extreme shit. Like... I am really too soft on him with his horror movie journey because he is really not doing this. Anyway, that's really about, I'm about to start Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power season 2. That's the next thing I'm about to embark on. Of course, Agatha All Along. I also started a new book. I know you guys love hearing about what I read. It's a memoir. It is a memoir written by one Mr. Patrick Stewart called Make It So, and Making It So. I'm only a couple of chapters in, and dude, that guy had a life. I think I say this all the time, but that guy had a life. Really, really interested to see where it goes, and then, report back. But it's just my wheelhouse. That's kind of where I am and what I'm doing right now. As we head into next week. All right, fellas, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds, though. I think we can close the book here. Before we get out of here, though, I do want to make sure that you all take a moment, a little once around, tell everybody where they can find you on the Chairshot Radio Network. That's part of the chairshot.com. And, if you want, throw out a social where folks can follow you as well. Let's start this week with Mr. David Ungar.
Yeah, you can find me on X at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG, Facebook.com/Attitude of Aggression, and at Attitude of Aggression, all one word, on Instagram and Threads. Something went wrong with the Packers.
Tunney?
Follow me at PC Tunney, Chairshot Radio Network, all your favorite streaming platforms. Throw a dart at a surface of the Chairshot Radio Network, and you'll hear me.
And you can follow me on the X Twitter at Wrestling Realist. That is at WrestlingRealist. This week, allegedly, you will catch me on the Chairshot Radio Network 3 times. Currently, you're hearing the first one as part of Bandwagon Nerds. Tuesday, I can guarantee that there will be an episode of Musical Chairs with myself and David Ungar. And as of today, the plan is for a third consecutive episode of the Greg DeMarco Show to hit your internet airwaves. Very, very excited about that. Okay. Tunney is wearing this face of I'll believe it when I see it, which is fair. It's fair. Like, I'm not even going to argue it. Like, it's fair. But I think it's going to happen. And then, of course, Patrick O'Dowd's going to take another vacation because heaven forbid we do. Actually, the Disney trip isn't going to interfere with the Greg DeMarco Show. It will interfere with Bandwagon Nerds and Musical Chairs, oddly enough. So that'll be a good time. Okay, I've rambled on long enough. Thank you, everyone, for listening. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. So make sure you get yourself out of the basement, get some sun, and check out some James Earl Jones magic. That man's an icon, a treasure. We lost him. Honor him by continuing to keep his work alive. You know what? Watch A New Hope. That's what I'm going to say. Watch A New Hope. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do that right now. So you go do it too. You've been listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com.
The great kings of the past looked down on us from those stars.
Really?
Yes. So whenever you feel alone, just remember that those kings will always be there to guide you. And so am I.
I don't understand what we're doing.
Shh.
Whose house is this?
Carrie Fisher. And she's a little crazy, so get ready to run.
It's not funny anymore, James.
Then why am I laughing?
This field, this game. It's a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good, and it could be again.
You are part of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor. Take her away!
I find your lack of faith disturbing. This will be a day long remembered.
You have controlled your fear. Now, release your anger. Join me. And together, we can rule the galaxy.
He told me you killed him.
No. I am your father.
That one. The little one right there.
Panasonic or the Fujitsu?
No, that one.
Oh, the Samsung.
Yeah, the Samsung.
You knew Babe Ruth?
George? I sure did. And he knew me. He was almost as great a hitter as I was. I would have broken his record, too, but...
You went blind.
Yep. I used to crowd the plate so the strike zone almost disappeared. Pitchers hate that.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.